is Hockey Central with David Amber, Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, hey, welcome to Hockey Central. Great to have you along. Pretty jam-packed 2 hours coming your way, fellas. In moments, we're going to welcome in Flames GM Brad Treliving, who yesterday, along with all the NHL GMs, had a meeting over the phone with the NHL. We'll get to the bottom of that. Next hour, we also have CAA NHL agent J.P. Barry. He's helped guide some of the biggest stars in hockey, Crosby, Malkin, Taves, Kane, Tavares, McKinnon, etc. We will ask him about how he's helping his clients through this unexpected work stoppage. And we're also going to chat with a man that sold more than 75 million records, a four-time Grammy winner, also an avid Vancouver Canucks fan. That's Michael Bublé, who jumps on the show at 12:25 today. So lots of good stuff coming your way on Hockey Central. Berkey, I know you set up that interview with Michael Bublé. You run in pretty powerful circles, don't you?
Well, I've had the good fortune of becoming friendly with Michael. I met him when I worked in Vancouver. He's a huge hockey fan. He likes to play himself, and he's a huge Canucks fan. So, yeah, fortunate to have a friendship with him. He's really an impressive guy.
Well, we're lucky. We get to run in, obviously, you know, rub elbows with all the top people in sports. That's kind of fun. But it's always neat when you see a celebrity outside the sports world. And, Stewie, I know you and Berkey, I'm sure, have had some celebrity encounters through the days. Was there ever the biggest celebrity sighting you had and someone you kind of were in awe of because you're like, wow, this is pretty cool. I'm meeting this person, whether it's from music or fashion or you know, something along those lines, film.
Well, one of my good friends is the head of security for The Weeknd, so I've had the opportunity to hang out with him quite a bit. And when I say rock star, he's definitely a rock star. I actually went and caught a show in Belgium, and I flew in from Russia to watch the show.
Wow.
And there was people literally dressed as him. There was impersonators. There's people fainting like it was Michael Jackson. So for me, The Weeknd, just based on, you know, his star power. And obviously, you know, he's a hit recording artist right now. And, you know, if I could switch places, we talked about it a couple weeks, if we could have another job, I think I'd like to be The Weeknd.
That's pretty cool. What about you, Berkey? I know you run in pretty good circles, like I was mentioning. You must have some pretty good celebrity stories as well.
Well, I've met a whole bunch of celebrities, but the best encounter I've had with a celebrity is when we went to the White House after we won the Cup and I met President Bush. And I had taken the Cup down to Camp Pendleton, which is the second largest Marine base on the planet. And displayed the Cup to a bunch of wounded warriors back from Afghanistan and Iraq with really serious injuries. And when I went to the White House, you go in the Blue Room before you go in to meet the president, presents to the Cup and the whole thing. But you get to meet the president, and a naval aviator introduces you to the president. And this was a young woman. And she said, "Mr. President, this is Brian Burke. He's the general." "Yeah, whoa," he says, "I know who he is." And he grabbed my hand with both hands and he said, "You took the cup down to Camp Pendleton to visit my boys. I want to thank you."
Wow. So
it's pretty cool. And then when we're walking out, I was telling Stewie before we came on the air, we finished the whole procedure, and he's walking down the hall of the White House with Scott Niedermeyer. And I'm right behind him, and he says to Scott, he goes, "How many games y'all play?" And Scotty says, "82, sir." And he goes, "82 games? You play 82 games the way you hit each other? That's crazy." He said, "We play 162 in baseball," because he owned the Rangers.
Yeah.
"And we play 162 in baseball, but that's baseball," he said. It was two guys just walking down the hall talking hockey. It was cool.
That is very cool. Wow. So The Weeknd, President Bush, some pretty good sightings. I think my greatest brushing of elbows with a celebrity was down in Atlantis in the Bahamas with my wife and kids. This was about 7-8 years ago. And in one of the lines to one of the... You guys been to Atlantis? It's a pretty crazy place with all the water slides. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
So in line for whatever, Leap of Faith or one of the big ones, the guy in front of me turns to me and says, "Hello." And he has these sunglasses on. I'm not sure who it is. I'm like, "Hey." And he has a baseball cap sort of pulled low. And he lifts his sunglasses off. He goes, "Hey, it's Mark Wahlberg." And I go, "Hey." And I had just interviewed him 2 weeks ago at the NBA All-Star Game in Los Angeles. And there he is. So we caught each other's eyes. And he's a big sports fan. And I'd worked at ESPN for some time. So he actually was at least familiar with who I was and since I'd interviewed him. So we start talking. Ended up hanging out with him for the next couple hours in Atlantis and going on water slides. And he was was there with his wife and I believe his four kids. He's like, this is the worst vacation ever. It's hard when you got four young kids. And I said, you're darn right, man. I said, you should have thought about that ahead of time. But a super nice guy. And it was pretty cool just to be, you know, watching, just like you said, Stewie, about with the weekend, you get people are just so enamored with the celebrity. And he's like a down to earth normal guy. We start talking about hockey. He's big friends with Ty Domi and he a huge Bruins fan. So we were going back and forth about that. So it was pretty cool. So we will be again bringing on Michael Bublé a little bit later on in the show, who's as big a recording artist as there is in the world today. So that's pretty cool. But this is a hockey show and we will talk to Michael Bublé about his love of hockey and the Vancouver Canucks. But we do start with Brad Trey Living, the Flames GM. And obviously it's a strange time in the hockey world with this work stoppage. But we know Brad's been super busy despite the fact the team isn't on the ice right now. Brad, I'm assuming he's there. Is Brad available to go? Oh, okay, we're going to get Brad Trey Living in just a matter of moments. And I know, Berkey, you're super familiar with Brad, having worked alongside him. And, you know, the one biggest maybe remiss we're going to have if the NHL season doesn't get to resume, and you know, all signs are pointing to the fact that might be a real distinct possibility, is we really could have been staring down our first Battle of Alberta in the playoffs in a long time. You know, there's so many things I would miss if the hockey season doesn't come back, guys, but is that the one thing? To me, that's the one thing I'd love to see, is Calgary-Edmonton seven-game series, knowing the battles they had on the ice this year. Is there anything that stands out to you guys as far as what we might miss this year if the league doesn't come back?
Well, I think there's a lot of stories that are, what a shame if we don't play, and that would be Boston Bruins would be one, but I think you're right. The Battle of Alberta, I think people have been dying to watch that, and it would be exciting and fun and interesting.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that there could be a resumption of play. We do have Brad Trey Living now available, the Flames GM. Hey, Brad, thanks for doing this. We really do appreciate your time here. First and foremost, how's your family doing in this difficult time?
We're doing okay. Hopefully you guys are doing well too, but no, we're doing good. Everybody's hunkered down. I have started to, as Berkey knows, I got a wife and two daughters, and I've limited the congregating now to parties of no greater than one, because I think they're starting to feel some conspiracies are starting to happen that they're trying to, they're sick and tired of having me around here. So, but all good down here.
Yeah, you're outnumbered. I understand that. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear the family's doing well and hunkered down like the rest of us and doing the responsible thing. Before we get to the hockey aspect, I was just talking to Anthony Stewart and Berkey, and we were sharing our sort of celebrity moments where you've met someone outside the hockey world. What about you? Is there someone you've met in your time? You know, you must come across a lot of pretty high, powerful, interesting people outside the hockey world. Is there a celebrity sighting you've had in your time that's kind of left you in awe a little bit?
You know what? One of the, I think it was our first year in Calgary that we went to Washington. Berkey, I can't remember if you were there or not. And I saw Obama, a group of us. He was going to the Capitol. I think he's either going to the Capitol or going to the White House from either or. And we got to see him getting out of the limo and all the rest of it. So that's the first one that pops off the top of my head.
That's pretty cool. Well, Berkey, Berkey mentioned Bush.
Regular basis, I got to see Brian Burke, you know, on a daily basis. So that was pretty good stuff.
Berkey.
Tree, we've been focusing. We've had a bunch of GMs and coaches on the last week, and we've been focusing on their path to the NHL. How did you get to be an NHL general manager? Where was your first management job?
Wow, that's a good one. Well, mine was a little bit unique, as you know. I was a minor league player, and so I realized pretty early on that my playing wasn't going to get me too far, so I tried to get involved.
A lot of us knew that early on.
I knew that was coming.
Tell these guys about when I cut you.
Yeah. So Berkey brought me to Berkey brought me to camp with the Canucks when he was assistant manager there. And so this is way back when. And And I'm a Vancouver kid, and so this was pretty. This was big times getting to go to the Canuck camp, and in my mind, I wasn't going to the Canuck camp. I was going to play for the Vancouver Canucks, and just skill and talent got in the way. But I get in there, and I think what I've had is a pretty good camp, and I sit down with Berkey, and he's like, you know what, kid, you've had a good camp, but right now we're going to let you go. And I said, well, you know, Brian, you know, I'm going to play. What are you doing? I'm going to play. At that time, the team was playing the Pacific Coliseum. And I kind of pushed back on him. He said, listen, kid, the only way you're getting into the Pacific Coliseum is buying a ticket. So good luck to you. And thanks for coming. But so I went on and played in the minors and played in Columbus, Ohio, actually, and learned and realized at that time that, hey, if you want to get involved in the game, you're going to have to take a different path. So I started working with the team in the summers and doing, you know, working in the front office. And that's 100 years ago. And it was eye-opening to me that there's a whole other world. As a player, you show up and you think that everybody just shows up at the rink because they're coming to watch you. But there was a whole front office there of selling tickets, selling sponsorship. You know, this was in the early stages of the East Coast League. So it was, you know, it was a real eye-opening experience. And the organization there at that time was ahead of their time, where we were getting, I think it was about $6,500 a night in the old Fairgrounds Coliseum and filling that arena. And so that was a real, you know, that was a real education for me of learning, you know, the business side of the business. And, you know, went on from there and got involved in a minor league and starting a minor league. But that was my first real introduction into, you know, even somewhat of a management role, but really just from a business working role outside of playing.
And what was your first NHL job?
My first NHL job was with the at that time the Phoenix Coyotes. So I was living in Phoenix, and had actually gone through an interview process with Pierre Lacroix for the Colorado Avalanche manager's job. I was running the Central Hockey League at that time, and had been contacted by Pierre. He was stepping down as the manager of the Colorado Avalanche, and I went through sort of the process with him and his owner, and Francois Jaguera ended up getting that job. And, you know, it was coming out of the first log. I think it was in it was 07. And so they said, listen, we've got going into CBA discussions, Francois had been here as an assistant manager, was real knowledgeable about the CBA. And so, you know, they made that decision. But Pierre was real good and called me a couple days later and said, listen, there had been a management change in Phoenix. And he says, I'm going to put a call into Don Maloney, who I didn't know. I'd never met Don. And he says, I'm going to tell him that we went through the process here, and he's going to need an assistant manager, and I'm going to put the call in for you. And so he was real gracious for doing that. And Don called a couple days later, and you know, I ended up getting hired to be assistant manager with Don. But I always tell him that, you know, at the time, the Central Hockey League offices were in Phoenix. And as people know, we were going through some financial struggles in Phoenix. And I believe the only reason I got the job there is you didn't have to pay any moving expenses. You know, I was already in town, so it was an easy hire.
And then how many years as assistant GM before you got to Calgary?
And I was seven years in Phoenix, and then was fortunate enough to, a guy in Calgary, you know, he went through his Rolodex and everybody else turned the job down. So he called me and said, listen, hey, do you want to, no, I was fortunate enough to have Brian give me a buzz and had kept our relationship, you know, even going back those, you know, 100 years ago when I played for him at camp. And I'd always stayed in touch and always admired Brian and was real honored when you called and went through the process with him and joined the Flames back in 2014.
We've been asking guys their path because I think people listening think you just pop into these jobs and they don't realize how much work goes into getting them.
Well, Burke, you got to ask how much you made his first job like you usually do.
Oh, your first job as assistant GM, do you remember what you made?
Well,
we asked John Tortorella, and his first coaching job, he made $6,000 coaching Virginia in the Atlantic Coast Hockey League.
Well, I remember, I vividly remember, you know, in the East Coast League making, you know, I remember going in there, and it was Terry Ruskowski was the coach and GM.
Good guy.
And he said, real good guy, and he said, you know, we're going to pay you $275 a week. And I was like, $275. I said, I need $300. And he said, okay, so it's $250. Do you want to keep going on the negotiation? And I said, okay, $275 is good.
Brad, I wanted to ask, how is it dealing with like former teammates now that you're a GM? I saw that you played with Jason Christie and John Torchetti and, you know, Matt Oates, who's now as an agent. Is that previous relationship, does it make it harder or easier doing business now that you're a GM?
I think Anthony, that it makes it easier. Like, it just, as you guys know, just having those relationships, and that's the one thing, I don't know if it's unique in our sport, but I do think it's unique. You know, we've all either played with somebody or played with a friend of somebody, and it's as big of a community as it is, it's a small community. And it's funny when you start going through and you start, you know, listing guys that you played with. And there's a lot of guys, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and I were teammates in Brandon. In Matt Oates and I played together in Columbus. And you look, you know, you kind of look back and all the guys that are either coaching now or managing or, you know, in the agent business, it's a small fraternity. So I think, you know, and there's a lot of guys, you meet as you get into it, but it's that network that you have. Until you really sit down and start thinking about it, it's bigger. It's a lot bigger than you think. And I think those things always help. You know, having a strong relationship, you'll have battles. It doesn't stop from cursing and yelling at each other when appropriate. But I think having those relationships is really valuable.
You didn't learn any of that yelling and cursing from me.
No, it was. There was a few things that were picked up too. Where Berkey would say, okay, this is, you know, when you're doing a deal or you talk about different stages, and he said, you know, once you hit the extreme profanity stage, you're, you know, a deal is right around the corner. So you're moving along.
And Kenny Holland was on the show yesterday, and he did talk about how he was mentored to get to the position he got to. He also had an incredible story about actually selling vacuums, and that almost was his destiny until a great phone call came his way to turn him back to the hockey route. But what about you? When you think about mentors, and I'm sure Brian's one of them, if not the prominent one, are there a few people who really helped blaze the trail for you and teach you some of the things that have helped you along in your career to get to this stage, Brad?
Oh, absolutely. And Brian's right at the top of the list. And, you know, I look at Brian and Don Maloney, you know, Brian, who's done everything in the game, right? When you really look at it and from the agency business, from the league business, from team assistant manager and manager standpoint, you know, there's not a box he really hasn't checked. So I was really fortunate, you know, getting into the league. And then, like I said, first having Don, who had been a longtime manager, been a player, and then getting to Calgary. And the real fortunate thing for me in Calgary, and, you know, it's one thing, I think, as you guys mentioned earlier, everybody's gotten, you don't just fall into these jobs, and you're going through a path and you're learning as you go. So every experience you go through, even going back as a player, prepares you. And I look at the time I spent as running a minor league, and you don't think about it at the time, but there's so many things that are transferable when you become a manager. But where I felt I was really fortunate is when I went to Calgary, you know, being able to have Brian sitting beside me, because every experience that you have, like I said, there's a lot of things you go through. The best job in hockey is assistant manager, because you've got all the
You got all the ideas. At the time, you think they're just brilliant. You think they're, why is he not listening to this wonderful idea you got? Then you get to the manager's chair and you realize how stupid most of your ideas were. and so to be able to have somebody that's sitting while you're when you're a manager to sort of, you know, bounce things off, or who stepped in a lot of the potholes that you could, and they can say, wait a minute, there's a little bit of turbulence ahead, maybe take a left here. I thought that was just so, so valuable, because there's nothing like, you know, like the old saying, it's, you know, co-pilot's a great job until you really actually have to land the plane, and there's a big difference. And until you're sitting in the big chair and you have to deal with the issues, and you have to go through those experiences, having somebody there. So when Brian was the president of hockey operations, I thought that was a brilliant move. It allowed them to bring in somebody, you know, who they believed in, but didn't have the direct manager, you know, day by day sitting in the big chair experience. And so I felt very fortunate to be able to have Brian, working along Brian for those first 5 years.
Tell us a little bit about your captain. We can't talk about the Calgary Flames without talking about Gio.
As you know, he's a real special guy. I got an opportunity to work with Shane Doan in Arizona, and to my mind, at that stage of my career, that was the best captain I've ever been around, and leader and individual. And Gio's cut from the exact same cloth. You know, he's just. And what makes Gio unique to me, what makes him so unique is his path, right? We talk about the path is, you know, this is a guy who's the reigning Norris Trophy winner who we joke all the time. I mean, he's never been drafted in his life. I mean, he never gets drafted in the OHL. He's an undrafted free agent signing to, in the NHL. So he's just had to carve his own path. And you talk about a self-made guy in terms of just how he prepares, how he looks after himself. You know, it's often said that you want to have great people around your organization and as an example. And it's just, you know, this is guys, the epitome of that. We ended up signing a couple of college free agents the other day. Last week, and I talked to them about that. And part of our pitch, and part of our, you know, when we talked about coming to Calgary, is you have, we think both guys have a chance to play, you know, aren't far away. But I said you have a real opportunity to learn from, to me, one of the best, very best leaders in the game, but somebody that you can emulate in terms of the path. You know, people say, well, I'm a free agent, I had to get drafted. This guy did that. He went down the same path you did and, you know, was a Norris Trophy winner a year ago. So, and besides all, and then we see what he does on the ice. Besides all that, as you know, Burke, he's just a great family man, a great guy, great teammate. And I can't say enough about Mark Giordano.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about the two prospects that you got out of college and Connor Mackey and Colton Pullman?
Yeah, well, Connor Mackey, and I first of all, credit goes to Craig Conroy and Billy Powers. You know, I think you get, there's times when the manager gets all this credit. We did some wonderful things. I talked to these guys at the end. The guys that did the heavy lifting are Craig Conroy and Billy Powers, who oversees all of our college work. And with Connor Mackey, it was about a 2-year process. He actually came to our development camp in 2017, out of the USHL as he was going into college. And from that time to now, he's put on 25 pounds. He's a big man. He moves well. He just does everything well. He's an all, when you say what kind of defenseman he is, he played in the power play, he killed penalties, he plays 5-on-5 against top players. So in the college game, he does it all. And I look at him as a guy that's big, rangy, mobile, can move a puck. We think this guy's got some real upside. So we're excited to have him. And like I said, the one thing with these college guys, and at the end of the day, that the college free agent game, there's a lot of people that get signed, and there's not as many make it. We think these two guys really have a chance, and we think Connor, he could be pushing for a job as early as next fall. In Colton, a real, real competitive, hard-nosed player. And when you talk to the staff at North Dakota, and that's a really successful program, you know, Dane Jackson, who played for you, Berkey, Jax, you talk to him, who's been there for 14 or 15 years. He said this is one of the most competitive and the highest character players he's been around. There's been and that's high praise talking about a lot of the guys that have come through that program. But, you know, sort of a stay-at-home defenseman, moves the puck, but he's a guy who plays hard around the paint and has got some edge to him. And again, we think he's pushing. And, you know, the one thing with these players, as you guys know, coming out of college as free agents, is they're not 18 or 19-year-old kids. You know, these are developed young men. So physically, they're ready. Now it's a matter of seeing, you know, how the game translates and how quick they can pick up the pro game. But we're excited to have both.
And Berkey always makes the point, you don't have to give up a draft pick. It's free. It's free found gold for you if one of these guys sticks. So congrats on those two signings. Listen, Brad, before we let you go, I do want to ask one newsy type question. You know, the league execs, the GMs meeting yesterday by phone. I just want to know, what was your takeaway from that meeting, knowing where we're at right now in this NHL season with this pandemic?
Well, the league does such a good job of keeping you up to speed. You know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly are terrific at just, you know, making sure that you know everything they know. So I think they're always helpful. But the big takeaway for me, David, is just the uncertainty. And I think that, you know, in times like this, the league is no different than any other walk of life, is we just don't know. You know, it's hard for everyone, but I think it's hard for, you know, especially on the manager's call, there's a lot of type A personalities. You want to have control of things. And we are so structured in everything we do. And like I said, you want to be able to be pulling the strings here. And we have zero control over the situation. And that's the biggest takeaway here is I know, you know, the league is constantly planning on different ideas if we could start here or how that would look. But all of it is really, it's just speculation at this point until we can get, you know, everything. And when I say we, until, you know, the world can get this thing under control, we don't know. So that was probably my biggest takeaway, David. We're hopeful. I'm an eternal optimist. And, but, right now, there's more question marks than answers, and so we do what everybody else is doing, and that's we hunker in, and we make sure we're all doing our part, and as I say to our group here and our family here, you know, as difficult as it is, and it's really difficult, and we're thinking of all those that it's the most difficult on, but this too shall pass. We will get through this, and hopefully. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later.
Well said, Brad. And listen, the most important thing for you personally right now, make sure your wife and your daughters and yourself, you stay healthy and safe. And we wish to see you back on the ice. We were remissing about the fact that we might not see that Battle of Alberta in the playoffs that we all would love to see. So just stay safe, and we hope to see you back on the ice with your team very soon, Brad. Thank you so much for your time here.
Okay, stay safe, guys. Thanks for having me on. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks,
Trey. Great stuff there from Brad Trey Living, the Flames GM, and like the rest of us in a holding pattern right now. But really interesting to hear his route to the National Hockey League and the mentoring that was given to him through Brian Burke. So some nice accolades for you there as well, Brian.
Well, I only interviewed one guy for that job. And we had a full list of people we were going to interview. But then Donnie Maloney, who's a wonderful man, he said we could talk to Brad before the draft. We thought we wouldn't be able to hire him until July 1st. So we were going to interview 8 or 9 people. When he said, no, you can interview him right now, I said to Ken King, we just lost Ken King, obviously, recently. Mm-hmm. I said, we got to jump on this guy right now. The part that Tree leaves out is the National Hockey League took over the Phoenix franchise for a couple of years. So he actually worked very closely with Bettman and Daly to run that team. They got their budget from the league. They had to interact with the league very closely, and the league people raved about this guy. They said, this guy is ready. He knows what he's doing. And so when Donnie gave us permission to move quickly, we pounced on him. And he's the only guy I interviewed, and he's done a great job, and I'm very proud of him.
David, we got to start sticking around Berkey a little bit more. We'll be going a lot of places.
I was going to say, how come some of that magic hasn't rubbed off on Stewie and me yet, Berkey? What's happening?
I just got here. I don't know about you, David, but I just got here.
You got to start with raw material you can work with, guys.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Berkey. So Brad Trey Living, great to hear from him. And it's been a whirlwind of GMs coming onto Hockey Central of late and giving their take on their personal careers and what we're seeing in the National Hockey League right now. Much more coming up. We're going to have J.P. Barry, agent extraordinaire from CAA. He'll be joining us, as well as Michael Bublé, a big hockey fan and one of the biggest recording artists in the world, will be joining us a little bit later on Hockey Central. Up next, though, we're going to talk about another Connor that could be taking the NHL by storm in a few years. If you haven't heard of Connor Bedard, you better listen in. That's coming up next on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back. Hockey Central, David Amber, Anthony Stewart, Brian Burke. Great to have you along. We just had Brad Trey Living, the GM of the Flames, joining us. Coming up, we'll have J.P. Barry, CAA Managing Director of Hockey, as well as Michael Bublé joining Hockey Central today. All right, gentlemen, question for you. John Tavares, Aaron Ekblad, Connor McDavid, what do they all have in common?
Millions of dollars in the bank.
Yes, correct. They were all also number one overall picks into the National Hockey League. And the other thing they have in common is they were all granted exceptional status as underagers to join and be drafted into the Ontario Hockey League. So it's usually a pretty good indication that there's something special about that type of player. Well, we have the latest exceptional status person, and that is Connor Bedard, a 15-year-old from Vancouver. He was granted exceptional status to be drafted to the WHL. 5'8", 165-pound forward, superlative skill. Check this out, 43 goals, 84 points in 36 games, playing in an under-18 league in West Vancouver as a 15-year-old. He is the first player ever to be given this sort of exceptional status for the Western Hockey League. And remember, that draft is expected to be coming up in April. So I want your guys' thoughts. First of all, Anthony, you played in the OHL. Imagine a 15-year-old. I mean, you know, we've seen others as well. Jason Spezza comes to mind. I know you're good buddies with him. You know, what kind of pressure does a 15-year-old walking into a league where you have exceptional players all the way up to 20 years old, what does that mean when you hear that Connor Bedard is that latest guy?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of pressure, you know, to make that jump, especially being that young. And I think it's the first time that's ever happened in the WHL. So for him to do that is very, very elite. And, you know, you obviously know that I trained some hockey players and I coach and you know, I coached some 05s, and that's his birth date, and they know him, and he's elite. He's a true talent. Mm-hmm. He has the potential to be a number one NHL draft pick just based on, you know, what these kids are telling me. And again, he's all over Instagram. He's all over the Wagon Hockeys, and this kid is elite. So the term elite is thrown around a lot, especially in this city when it comes to minor hockey. And a lot of these kids can – it's tough to really step into the OHL as a young guy, let alone going down, you know, as a year younger than everybody else. And, you know, I played with Nathan Horton in the National Hockey League with the Florida Panthers, and he was playing junior B for the Thorold Blackhawks at 13. So he was in Pee Wee, David, playing junior B hockey with men. So it's few and far between. It's the first time. So for the first time to happen in the WHL and him make this jump, he's definitely elite.
All right, and I misspoke. I said Spezza, and I didn't mean Spezza, but Shane Wright, obviously, and Sean Day were the other exceptional status in the OHL. Shane Wright, by the way, 39 goals in 58 games with Kingston. He doesn't turn 16 till January, so Shane Wright, a bona fide future star in the National Hockey League, and it looks like Connor Bedard would be next guy up as far as that type of elite star coming into the league potentially. Berkey, I want your idea. From an NHL executive standpoint, you know, how do you track these guys and how do you make decisions on an executive level? Maybe you're a little bit more reluctant to give up that first round draft pick if you're a bubble playoff team, just knowing you don't want to lose out on the opportunity potentially to draft a guy like a Bedard a few years from now.
Well, I think it's an unusual year because I would always tell the guys like Sidney Crosby's draft year, you know, everyone talked about him and for years before he was eligible. And, you know, Eric Lindros back when he went to the World Juniors when he was only 17. And we would always say, look, we're not going to watch them until their draft year. It really can't, really doesn't matter what they do before their draft year anyway. But this year, with a lot of scouts out of work, not being able to go watch junior or college games, they're probably watching this kid more closely than they would have otherwise. And so you'd get a book on him. But what strikes me reading about this kid last night, reading the interviews and the commentary, one thing struck me about Connor McDavid, that struck me about Sidney Crosby, was the seriousness of these kids. Their polish and their intensity is so clear at this age. That's why you think that they're probably going to make it, is because these guys have a business-like approach. They know what's required. They're going to get it done. And I remember watching Sidney Crosby being interviewed and watching Connor McDavid being interviewed and thinking, man, this kid, he's talking like he's 21 or 22 years old. And there's a maturity about these exceptional kids that accompanies their skill level. So this kid's impressive. And the Western Hockey League has been very reluctant to grant exceptional status. This is the first time, and I think they see something special here.
And the one thing I can say about just the whole elite thing, I'll post the picture on Twitter later. Like, Connor McDavid, they knew he was going to the NHL at 12 years old. He was that elite. He was that special. Mm-hmm. Where I remember doing charity events in Toronto, and he was 13, 14 years old as a special celebrity guest at 14 years old. I think it was 2 years before he was even in the OHL. So these special talents come around only so often, so it's going to be great for the game once we start going again.
And how they can handle that, too, and that speaks to the maturity that Brian just mentioned. I mean, you have to be a special type of person to be able to handle that type of pressure and adulation and celebrity at such a young age. I mean, I have a 13-year-old son, a 15-year-old daughter, and to thrust them into that type of spotlight at such a young age, only a special person can really handle that type of pressure. So Connor Bedard, if you haven't heard the name, here we go. Another great Connor from, you know, potentially playing out on the West Coast. We could have Connor versus Connor in 4 or 5 years, which could be very exciting as well. So Connor Bedard, again, exceptional status granted to him to the WHL, just 15 years of age, obviously a career to keep an eye on. Maybe one day he'll be making a little NHL history. We don't want to get too ahead of ourselves here, but coming up on Hockey Central, we're going to break down what's an incredibly busy day in NHL history. And if you don't believe me, there's some big names to get to here. There's a little history as far as American hockey teams concerned, as well as Greg Millen, Scotty Bowman, and Eric Lindros. We will connect the dots coming up next right here on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back, Hockey Central. Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, David Amber. On this day in hockey history, March 25th.
And now, it's time for some old-time hockey.
It's Tobe Lake, Dick Clapper, Eddie Shore. Those guys were the greats.
Yeah, sure, old-time hockey.
Like Eddie Shore.
Yeah.
Coach. Our line starts.
Oh, man. We have nothing but time to watch some great movies, and Slapshot might be the greatest sports movie, certainly one of the greatest hockey movies we have seen. I still love watching. I haven't seen that in a few years. I got to get that back up. You guys watch that on a fairly regular basis?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I watched it with my father-in-law for the first time because we do a lot of references on the show, so I watched it with him actually a couple months ago just to show him what the references were all about.
How do you like it?
He's like, you guys are crazy. You're crazy.
Well, it's funny, even talking to Brad Trey living back there, guys, ECHL, and Brad is a true gentleman, as you guys know. He put up 200 and something plus minutes in the ECHL. So it was a rough, I mean, it's a rough league. And Slapshot was, you know, it was art imitating, reality in many respects there, don't you think?
Well, I played against, this shows you how old I am. I played against the two Carlson boys that were in the movie. So Jeff and Steve Carlson were in the movie. Jack was already playing in the WHA.
The Hanson brothers.
Yeah, so they're from Virginia, yeah. Minnesota, way up north on the Iron Range. And then I played against with and against summer hockey with Dave Hanson, who was the third of the Hanson brothers.
Yeah.
And his son Christian played for us briefly here in Toronto.
That's right.
And, Dave Hanson, the two Carlsons, Jeff and Steve. Steve was a star. He was a great high school hockey player. And Jeff was big and skilled. Jack was tough. Jack was scary tough.
Mm-hmm.
But Dave Hanson was legit tough, too. And having known those guys, and I see them, they're still doing appearances and rinks and everything. I still bump into them once in a while. They're just great guys. And Paul Newman told people later that was the most fun he ever had doing a movie.
Yeah, but like David, like they were showing the Maple Leafs versus LA Kings playoff game yesterday on Sportsnet. And just look at it's a game 7 of a playoff game, and guys are still elbowing, still, they're not even calling it. So the game was tough, and the game is tough. So if you're a young kid and you're questioning the integrity or the toughness of the game, watch those games, because that was old-time hockey, as they say.
Yeah, and we've got nothing but time right now. Everyone's cooped up at home. It's the right thing to do. So go to Netflix or wherever, get Slapshot, Miracles, another great hockey movie. Some people love it or hate it, whether it's Youngblood with Rob Lowe way back in the day.
Mighty Ducks.
Which was kind of the Mighty Ducks. There you go. There's a whole number of great hockey movies you can check out while you got some time at home. So on this date in hockey history, March 25th, we'll go way back, 1917, the Seattle Metropolitans, this was pre-NHL, it was the PCHA, Pacific Coast Hockey Association. They were the first U.S.-based team to win the Stanley Cup, which is cool and makes a lot of sense now that, you know, Seattle's going to be having a team coming into the NHL in about a year and a bit's time now.
Well, I wonder if they're going to put up a banner. Some people have suggested they should put up a banner for that first Stanley Cup team from Seattle.
What do you think, Berkey?
I would. I think it's cool. It's part of their history. It's not part of their franchise, but it's part of the city's history. Seattle has a great background and a great history in hockey and professional hockey. The Western Hockey League for years.
Yeah.
They have a great history, and I would celebrate that. I might not put it up where I'm going to put my regular banners, but I'd put one up.
Mm-hmm. That franchise is going to do well, just like Las Vegas has done well. I have no doubt the Seattle franchise will be a home run for the National Hockey League.
What's the name of the team? Did they find a name yet?
No, I think with everything going on right now, they're holding off on making any type of announcement like that because they won't be able to have people gather together to celebrate it and give it its just.
Well, solid ownership. You start at the top, solid ownership, solid people with hockey backgrounds. You look at their
hires. What would you guys like the name to be?
I say they go the Disney route and go Seattle Supersonics and have Sonic the Hedgehog be the mascot. No? Okay. Berkey says no. Berkey left.
Well, there's this whole Kraken thing, and yeah, Berkey's out. He's had enough. I like the Metropolitans. Why not dig back into your history?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't given it that much thought.
Got to be something green, as Jeff says, right?
Yes. Yeah, you want that color scheme with almost like the kind of similar to the Canucks in a way. It'll be a great rivalry there as well. I can't wait for that. Meanwhile, this day in hockey history, 1980, Steve Shutt became the first player in NHL history to score a goal against 20 teams in one season. Charlie Simmer would do it later that night. So two guys did that. And that brings me to a good trivia question. Do you guys remember Gretzky's rookie season, 79-80? Three players actually led the NHL in goals that year. Do you know who the three players were in Gretzky's rookie year to lead the league in goals?
No.
Stastny, one of them?
No. Simmer's one of them. Simmer, Danny Gare, and Blaine Stoughton. If you ever want to win a drink at a bar, that's a great trivia question because people think it's either Marcel Dion or they think it's Gretzky. And Gretzky and Dion tied for the Art Ross, but it was Gare, Simmer, and Blaine Stoughton of the now defunct Hartford Whalers who actually led
defunct.
The league in
they're
goals.
In Carolina.
Well, okay, I guess. The well-traveled.
Great goal scorer.
Yeah, of course.
Danny Gare, Danny Gare was a fun player to watch in the day because he scored a lot of goals, but he was tough too.
And he had that great lid, the great helmet.
Yep.
1986, guys, Greg Millen, Sportsnet's own Greg Millen, recorded his ninth career shutout and first with the Blues. It's pretty shutouts were hard to come by back then. I almost think shutouts back then, and I've talked to Kelly Rudy about that. A shutout back in the 80s should count for two shutouts now, don't you think?
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, is a lot of people talk about the 80s and 90s, early 90s, and say it was a no-goalie league because you watch a lot of goals that were scored that would not go in today. But it was also a hooking and holding league. These guys had to fight through unbelievable abuse to get a chance to score. So I think it kind of evens out. Like, players today don't have to put up with any of that.
No. No, and here's the one thing I'll say about the goaltenders back then. They were great athletes. I mean, I remember growing up in the Mike Palmateer era, and I know everything was an adventure and the huge glove saves, but my point is they were smaller, the equipment was smaller. They had to be basically acrobats in the net.
Yeah, I played with Pete Peters of the American League, and he ended up winning a Vezina in Washington later, or in Boston, I guess it was. And Pete was one of the first bigger goalies, but he worked so hard at becoming a good goalie, and he was a great teammate. He spoke very slowly. So I was talking to him on the phone one time because I represented him after I quit playing, and he was in his backyard in Edmonton, and I won't say exactly what he said, but he's talking on the phone, and he talks really slowly like this, and he said, "Holy cow," and I said, "What?" I thought his kid fell down or something. He goes, "A moose just crashed through my fence."
Oh my goodness. 1996, Eric Lindros, a goal and two assists. He scored 100 points for the first time in his Hall of Fame career, which begs the question. We only have about 90 seconds, guys. I don't think we're ever going to see a player like Eric Lindros again, are we? As skilled and as dominant physically as he was.
Well, he got in. We don't talk about our deliberations much, but I'm on the selection committee at the Hockey Hall of Fame, and Eric got in on what they call the Comet Theory, where a player didn't have the numbers over his career that would normally justify making it to the Hall. Same with Pavel Bure and Cam Neely. Mm. But they burned so brightly during the peaks of their careers that they deserved to be included. And Eric Lindros was the best player in the league for 3, if not 4 years.
Yes.
And a wrecking ball of a player. Scored, made plays, but annihilated people too. Like, people were nervous when they were on the ice with Eric Lindros.
Stewie, any thoughts?
No, great player and definitely a great guy. Quick story about him. I was healthy scratched one time, so I had to go for a skate after the Leafs' morning skate, and they were actually out there going for a little bit of a twirl, and Eric Lindros came over and asked me if I want to join them for a skate, and I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And then Brian McCabe comes over and says, "Hey, Mike Keenan will kill you. Get off the ice, kid."
Wow, well, Eric Lindros, one of the members making history on this date back in 1996. Much more coming up, second hour of Hockey Central. J.P. Barry from CAA, he'll be joining us, as well as Michael Bublé. Keep it locked here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is Hockey Central with David Amber, Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome in, hour 2 of Hockey Central. Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, David Amber, and we've had Brad Trey Living on, and Burke, he's been able to connect with a lot of GMs to bring them onto the show. Always great stories about how they got their careers started. This hour, we're going to have Michael Bublé coming up, so interesting to have a big recording artist, one of the most popular recording artists in the world. He's also a huge Vancouver Canucks fan. He'll be joining us in a matter of moments. And up next, we have an agent extraordinaire, J.P. Barry, CAA Managing Director of Hockey, and we'll get to the bottom of how J.P. got going in his career as well. But J.P., great to have you on the show. And I wanted to start with, it's good to have you here, Jay. And I want to start with, we've been having a bit of a theme here about celebrity sightings because, you know, Brad Trey Living had a chance to get close to Barack Obama, and Brian Burke had a chance to meet with former President George Bush as well. Anthony Stewart hung out with The Weeknd, and I met Mark Wahlberg and hung out with him a little bit. What about you? You spent a lot of time in L.A. I'm sure you have some good celebrity sightings in your day.
Okay, I guess you can choose between Tom Cruise or
I lost you there. Tom Cruise, what was the second one?
Vladimir Putin. Sorry about that cell phone in Toronto here.
Vladimir Putin?
Yeah, you have to choose between those two.
All right, there's got to be a
Putin. About Tom Cruise.
Well, okay. I want to hear. Wow. So there's some stories there. You got a story for us.
No, when we brought our hockey division over to CAA, we did it along with the baseball and our football division. We had our sort of first meeting at CAA, and we're sitting in a small going about our plans for starting a new sports division with all three of them. And as the sort of our new director was explaining things, the lights sort of went up. I was walking down the steps behind us with a couple of bugglefish in a bag. And you know the analogy. So it was Tom Cruise, and he was welcoming us to CAA, and I guess he was doing his best Jerry Maguire impersonation for us. So that was quite funny, and he spent the meeting with us. So that was an interesting connection.
He's a little wee guy, hey, eh?
What's that?
He's a little wee guy, eh?
Yeah, I was really, really shocked. Yeah, like 5'5", maybe? 5'5", 5'6".
You know, Schwarzenegger came to our cup party, and he's no more than 5'9 or 5'10". Like, I could eat peanuts off his head.
Yeah, really?
When we do our training camp in the summertime with our young players, he's always, like, working out at the gym there. And, yeah, you're right, he's very small. They say all the players are small with big heads.
Well, Schwarzenegger's shoulders were a little wider than mine, but he was shorter than I was.
Wow. Sylvester Stallone, same thing, right?
Yep.
Oh, that's funny. So Jay, listen, you've created a bit of an agent empire with CAA, some of the biggest names in the game. Here in Toronto, you got Riley and Tavares as a couple of your key clients. Take us through where you started out as in the legal profession to the evolution of where you are now.
Well, Brian will remember I was hired. I was a young labor lawyer in Toronto, and the Players Association was gearing up to become a bigger entity and to hire people. And I came in to the Players Association right around the time of the lockout in the 90s, and immediately started working with actually Brian and Dave Nonis on the other side on quite a few different cases. And then probably after about 4 years there, I had worked with a lot of the agents in the business and decided to move out. And Mike Barnett sort of the one day after starting on my way at IMG.
JP, what's your advice to parents right now that are in Toronto who are obviously listening right now that there's some that are being approached at 13, 14, 15 years old. When's the right time to get an agent, and what should they be asking and what should they be doing when trying to choose the right agent for them?
You know, I think the whole age of selecting an agent has gotten completely out of control. And I'm one of the people talking to the Players Association about perhaps putting in a rule that we have in Sweden where you're allowed to make contact until the 16th or down to birth year. So I think 15 is the youngest. I think decisions have to be made at 15, but I think anything below 15 is completely unnecessary. And I think we have to try and stop that and just let players develop.
And we, you know what, we were talking about Connor Bedard, who's just given exceptional status. He's a 15-year-old out in British Columbia. I'm sure you've been made aware of what he potentially could become. How do you enforce that? Because there's always going to be people who will go around. And if it's not the agent specifically going and talking to the young player, it's going to be a friend of the agent or an associate. And how would you enforce that? Because it does seem right that you shouldn't have 12 and 13-year-olds getting approached by agencies, but you do have it happen.
Well, we have 10 years of it in Sweden now, and I think the best enforcers of the rule are the other agents who didn't get the players. They're going to let you know what happened. They're going to let you know how the contact was made and who. It's really a process, and there has been over there where there's even fines and suspension. So, no, you have to take it seriously.
Berkey.
Yeah, it's a little different. Obviously, it's really matured because it was a long time ago that I represented players, but I did my first player contract, I think, in 1983. I graduated from law school in 81, and I think I worked on my first two contracts for Mike Buzniak and Frank Baith in 1983, and then it really took off. But all the guys I got were referrals. They were all referred to me. So, like, I got Brett Hull's mom called me and asked me if I'd represent him, and people were calling me and asking me if I represent them. So I didn't get into the recruiting, and I didn't get into certainly not kids. No one was talking to 15-year-old kids back then, but it's very different. Back then, there was like a handful of guys that had probably 80% of the players. You know, Art Kaminsky, Norm Kaplan, Gus Bedale, that group. And they really had a lock on the business. It was really hard to get clients. So I got lucky. The first two guys that I represented played with me in the American League. And it just went from there. And then I picked up Kevin Dineen and Brett Hull and Joel Otto, and ended up having like 30 guys in the show by the time I got out in 1987. So very different now. Parents ask me all the time. I say, you don't need an agent. You don't technically need an agent until you've got a decision to make on playing somewhere. And that's not till 16, mm-hmm. in my view. You say 15, maybe, JP. I don't know, but...
Yeah, Jay, what is it word of mouth? I mean, Brian brings up a good point. It's not necessarily about you having to go recruit. Is it word of mouth often? You know, people find out you're Sydney. Oh, shoot, did we lose JP? We're working on getting JP back.
JP, but, pay your cell phone bill, for God's sake.
Must be with Bell.
must be.
Burke, yeah, so that, I guess
Brad,
it is a lot of that.
I wanted to mention about that, too, and... You know, I'm on the front lines of the minor hockey in Toronto, and you know, there's, you know, people that are recruiting four teams saying, hey, you know what, we're going to get you an agent at 13 and 14 years old. But I'm like, well, what can an agent really do for you at this young age? They're going to, you know, buy you some sticks and skates. Okay, that's great. You need sticks and skates? Yeah, we'll help you get that. So it's a bit of a problem, and it's good that it's being recognized at the higher levels, because I'm at the arenas, and I'm seeing these guys looking at these kids, and I'm like, It's craziness, Dave, and I'm sure you know that too, because you're in and out of the arenas also as well.
Yeah, I think what I find problems with it is I think there's promises being made and expectations are being elevated, and you know, you have these exceptional players. You know, again, my son's 13, and at his age group, and Stewie, you coach a AAA team of 2006ers. There's some exceptional kids there, but there's no guarantees, and you know the path between 13 and 18. It's very circuitous. There's no direct path to the National Hockey League. Absolutely. I mean, there's only 700 players in the league, period. So I just don't like the fact that I think certain players and families are being promised things that no one can guarantee and no one can deliver. And you don't want to over-promise and under-deliver. And I think there's a lot of people who are disappointed because of that.
Yeah, and I'm having some conversations with these kids that are, you know, they're getting closer to the age. And they're like, well, we'd like you to sit down with our agent. And I'm like, well... Does the agent know what stick he uses? No. Does he know what curve he uses? No. Because I'm, you know what? I'm your agent, and I'm doing it for free. Mm-hmm. So it's just crazy, and it sort of baffles me now because, you know, I was a pretty elite hockey player, and I got my first agent, Bob Yor. I think I was 15 turning 16. So I like to use this platform for as good as possible. So I would say, kids, wait to make that decision, you know, in getting an agent. And some parents now are paying agents. There's no legit agent out there that's going to really take your money. If they're a legit agent, it's not what you're going to be giving them. It's what they're going to be doing for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we do have JP Barry, CAA Managing Director of Hockey, back with us. Jay, you okay? You got us now?
Sorry about that. I'm in the hinterlands of West Toronto, I guess. We don't have cell coverage.
Well, listen, I mean, one thing we were just talking about is, and you brought it up about the age limits and doing the right thing and not over-promising and under-delivering to families, et cetera. What would be your advice, though, to young aspiring agents? Because that's another part of the equation. I'm sure you have a lot of young guys who are getting into law and young women who say, I'd love to do what you're doing. What do you tell them?
Well, you got to do it the right way. You have to build your business the right way, and you have to look at the leaders in the business and see who's the best model for you and try to build your business the right way. And if you don't want to build it the right way, then it's a very tough business to survive in, because, you know, there's some very quality groups there at the top of the chain, as Brian knows.
What's the right way? Give us a bit more depth on that.
Well, it starts with initial contact, like what you're doing with the player, the kind of advice you're giving them, looking at every single option. I mean, what you're mostly doing with a 15-year-old is making very big decisions about their path in life and taking a look at who they are. Like, there's some kids that are really decent students that should really look at the path of going towards the NCAA. So that's something that you have to start looking at. Okay, well, what are they going to do at age 16, 17, 18? Because, you know, you don't really play in the NCAA until 18, 19, 20. So, mm-hmm. Or if it's the OHL, if it's a young player who's driving towards the OHL, like, should they go at 16? Do they need another year of development? Should they actually be patient and wait? So there's a lot of decisions about timing and path that you have to go through.
I remember, JP, there when I worked at the league, I went down and met with the college coaches, and they were really upset that we were taking guys out of school. So, and you know, you take a guy out after a second year and say, well, we don't take a guy out unless we're pretty sure he's going to play within 12 months. Otherwise, we'd just as well leave him there. He doesn't count as a contract. We don't have to worry about him. We're only allowed 50 contracts, so we really kind of have the same interest as you. But once a guy is maxed out his ability at that level, where there's nothing more he can accomplish, it's time to go. And I said, by the way, you guys can complain all you want about us taking a guy after a second year, but that guy's likely to be 21 now and not 20, because they park these guys in the USHL for a year or even 2 years. Some guys get scholarship commitments at 16, but they got to play till they're 20 in the USHL.
And I think it's evolved now. I think they actually realize that they have two tracks of players. They have these stars that come in at 18 and sometimes 19, who they know they're probably only going to keep for 2 years, maybe if they're lucky three, but mostly two. And then they have the other players, like you said, who they want to put them out in Penticton in the BCHL, or they want to put them in the USHL till they're probably about 20. And a lot of them play from age 20 to 24, so it's definitely an older man's league compared to the OHL.
Yeah, I remember when I was a freshman at Providence College, I was 18, and so were all the other freshmen. And I think Matt Gilroy, when he won the Hobey Baker, was 25. So it's totally different from when I played. Every freshman in our room was a true freshman, was an 18-year-old. And that's just not the case anymore. Yeah. There might be one.
And Jay,
there's
you
more
have an
focus on development and path, and the NCAA is an older league.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, you have an extensive roster of NHL clients. What kind of questions have the players been asking you? What kind of advice have you had to give them during this work stoppage that's very unexpected?
I think the hardest thing to tell them is to slow down. You don't need to skate tomorrow. A lot of these guys have not gone, some of the younger players literally haven't gone a week in their lives without skating. So this is a little bit of a shock to their system that they can't get to a hockey rink. They can train at home. So, I mean, the hardest thing is, sorry, guys, like, we all got to just sit down and relax here and wait this thing out for a while. And I think it's hard for all of us right now to just, stay at home and not do things.
With your European clients, did you have to help with the logistics? Because, the mandate was given by Commissioner Bettman a little more than a week ago that you don't have to stay in your home city, your city of where you play. If you want to go back to Sweden, to Finland, to the Czech Republic, go about that. Did you get involved at all to help the logistics there?
We did. I mean, actually, we had a real conflict because even though that mandate came out, a lot of the teams didn't want the players to leave, and Brian understands that as a manager. You always feel like, I want to keep them close by, and this thing could start back up. But in this instance, I really did not feel that we were looking at weeks. I felt that we were looking at months, and I pretty much got most of my Swedes. If they wanted to go home, if they were Swede or Russian or Finn or Czech, they went home. So we got involved in, I think, close to 30 players being sent back to Europe over 3 or 4 days.
And Jay, you and Berkey collaborated, back in the day, the Sedins. You were the agent for the Sedins. Berkey, obviously, from what he told me, he was instrumental in getting the Sedins together in Vancouver. I'm not sure if that's true or not. I mean, what was it like? What was it like, you guys working through that to pull off one of the great moves in NHL draft history, really?
Oh, Brian definitely had to take the lead because he had to make these trades that were very, very difficult trades. Our job, I spent a couple months trying to find a team that would do this. And, Brian will know why I have a good relationship with Dave Nonis. And it started with us talking about, look, we want to do this. Like, we're definitely going to have these two young clients play together. And part of that was telling other teams that if they're not together, one of them's going to go play junior and become a free agent in 2 years. That was the play at the time, that one player could play out, that come over here from Sweden and play junior hockey and be a free agent and join his brother in 2 years. So that was the leverage that we were using to get other teams to back off. So Brian got the trades that I had to do a lot of, you know, not pleasant calls with other teams that were trying to draft one of the other Sedin.
Well, you know what's interesting, or at least I think it's interesting, was, and you guys were helpful, you and Michael Barnett were definitely helpful in getting Tampa to trade the first pick overall down, because you made it clear to Rick Dudley, because I remember he called me, we were screaming at each other on the phone. He said, you sent your trained donkeys up here to threaten me. He says, how dare you? I said, I didn't send anyone up there. So anyway, but again, I've told the story. I wasn't even sold on this whole thing until I saw him in the World Championships that year. That's where I got religion.
Yeah, I was at that World Championships, and I knew from that World Championships, because Rick Dudley had just moved from Ottawa to Tampa Bay, so everyone had told me sort of through the Ottawa circuit that he had Daniel Sedin at the time rated number one. So I think we all were operating under the assumption that at that time that Daniel was going to be the number one pick.
Yeah, for sure, and that's what I tell people when people ask me about it, how smart I was. I said, well, I wasn't all that smart. I didn't take them in the right sequence because, as it turns out, Hank was actually a better pro than Danny. They're both joys, and I know Danny doesn't like hearing this, but we found out that Hank could play with anybody, but Danny could only play with Hank. And so I took them in the wrong order, and then that's why they were 22 and 33. They wanted high numbers. You remember this, JP? And I said, no high numbers on my team, so take 22 and 33. And now no one will ever wear those numbers again.
Yeah, those numbers. I also remember at the time they were supposed to go 1-2, but somehow you made a switch at the very last second to make them go 2-3 so that I would get lower bonuses in the contract.
Yeah, it worked, too. You guys screwed me, though, because we had said, okay, I said, if I can do this, what are you looking at for bonuses? And you guys gave me said, this is what we're looking for. And then I made the deal, and it came back a little different. Not too much, but it screwed me a little bit.
Well, unfortunately for you, Patrick Stefflin took his number one and got a big deal, so we had to get the same or close to it.
What do you guys remember, JP? You and Berkey, obviously, you had to work against one another as an agent, as a GM. What do you remember having to sit there in the negotiation room with a Brian Burke?
No, I mean, as Brian knows, there's different styles of negotiation, and you know, it can get contentious sometimes near the very end. But you're generally working towards a goal, and every side has to give, and there has to be a lot of communication. So there's more than just the two of us butting heads. And, you know, oftentimes in Brian's days in Vancouver, like, I would start with David, and he and I would go at it. And then sometimes at the time, Mike Barnett would talk to Brian, and, you know, I was the number two to Mike at that time. So it's, you know, it's a process. Like, it's sometimes 30, 40 calls, and it can stretch over months, or sometimes it can all happen in 48 hours.
Yeah, and that, JP, you bring up a good point. See, I never thought, when I worked for Pat as the assistant manager, I never thought that was a good use of his time to make 40 phone calls. So I did all the player contracts, every single one except for the two Russians, Larionov and Krutov. And when I got to Toronto, my first year in Vancouver, I think I did all the contracts. Then Dave Nonis did them all. So he did most of the Sedins. I had very little to do with that other than, like you say, jump in and curse and yell once in a while. But we had, if you recall, we had done a lot of the work on these contracts before we did the deal. I said, look, I'm not doing this. I'm not stepping off the face of the known earth and then getting a demand that doesn't make sense. If I can pull this off, what are we looking at? So we had some idea what we were looking at beforehand. And you guys, like I say, you screwed me a little at the end, but that's okay. It worked out okay.
It was rough.
It did. Yeah, it worked out perfectly well. The Sedins both numbers retired, and soon enough, both will be in the National the Hockey Hall of Fame as well. So it did work out, that's for sure.
All you need to do, Brian, I think Brian's done it, but all you need to do is look at that actual draft year, and that was a minefield draft. I think the Sedins together have almost more games than the entire rest of the round, except if you take maybe Martin Havlat or Tim Connolly out of the mix. That was not a great draft, so he definitely got, you know, did not two best players.
Yeah, that's for sure. Listen, JP, stay safe, be well, and always good hearing your voice. One of the best agents you're going to find in the National Hockey League, JP Barry, CAA Managing Director of Hockey. Thanks so much, Jay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, JP.
All right, so there's J.P. Barrie, and up next we're going to have Michael Bublé, one of the most successful recording artists of our generation. He'll be jumping on. He's a huge Canucks fan. We'll talk a little hockey with Michael Bublé. That's coming up next right here on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Great to have you back here on Hockey Central. Anthony Stewart, Brian Burke, and David Amber. And it's our pleasure to welcome in one of the most successful recording artists in the world, a 14-time Juno Award winner, a 4-time Grammy Award winner as well, Michael Bublé, who's also a huge hockey fan. Michael, how are you?
Hey, hi, good. Thanks, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for... Berkey's bored, but we're doing well. You and Berkey, I guess, are pretty tight because Berkey's pulling all the strings.
Yeah, I'm...
Getting you on the show today.
I'm a big fan of Brian. I really do like Brian. I love the fact that he's always honest and he's always real, and you get what you see.
Well, I appreciate that.
Berkey?
I met Michael when he was just becoming a star, and actually, my ex-wife put him on, and I'll let Michael tell the story, but Jennifer put him on their daytime show and was one of... Well, you tell the story. Michael will tell it better than I
would. Yeah, it's true, Brian. That was one of the first times I'd ever been... anyone had ever done anything on me. I was, I think, about 18 or 19, 18 maybe, or 19, something like that. And I had been working at some of the clubs, and she was just really kind. And she said, you know, would you like to come down? I think it was BCTV. Would you like to come down to BCTV?
Yeah.
And I'll put you on. And she interviewed me. And I actually have it. When I look back, I'm so embarrassed. But I never forgot her kindness ever.
Well, I know you didn't, because we came to see you play at the Hollywood Bowl, which is a big outdoor amphitheater in L.A., and you stopped the show and thanked her in front of all 12,000 people or whatever it is. Or maybe it was the Greek. Maybe it might have been the Greek. But you stopped the show and thanked her.
Yeah, one of those, yeah. Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, you got to remember. You got to remember who helped you get there.
So who's your favorite player on the Vancouver Canucks now?
My favorite player on the Vancouver Canucks, it's an interesting question, because my favorite guy, because I can say that we're pretty good friends, is Brock Besser. I really like Brock. I think he's a beautiful guy, and I really like his family a lot, and his dad has so much character and has gone through so much and still has this beautiful attitude with life, and his sister and his sisters and his mom. They're not really good people. They're my kind of people. As far as players go, I'm a big fan of Quinn Hughes. I think in my 45 years of watching, you know, the Canucks or whatever it's been since I remember, 40 years, we've never had anything close to that kind of a player, that kind of a defenseman. And it's funny, you know, I've always hoped, you know, that we could somehow land a generational talent like that, but I just didn't see it coming. I really didn't. I was happy at the draft when they got him. I knew there was upside there. I was worried. I talked to many people within brass of the Canucks or other teams, and there was always that talk about size. You know, he's a smaller guy. And even, you know, Brian, I remember watching the draft, and I remember you saying that. Here's a guy with a small body. And, you know, obviously, you know, small. But, man, I had no idea. I mean, we knew offensively he'd probably be good, but his defensive play, his way with the stick, how good he is in getting that first pass out after taking away the puck, I was shocked.
Where does your love of hockey come from?
My father was, he played on a team called the G&B Bricklayers. They were a beer league team, and I would go to all the games, and my grandfather had season tickets to the Canucks. So there were years when I'd go to 40 games. I'd go to every game. And growing up, you know, Yuri Bubla, Ivan Hlinka, Stan Smeal, there were so many that I just loved. I idolized them. They were my heroes. And as I got older, I just started to love the game, and it became a little bit less about the Canucks, even though I was always a fan of the Canucks, and more a fan of hockey, where I just loved, you know, watching every single game. And I just love the sport. And it's funny, as this is a bit of a segue, but as we obviously come into this thing where we're all fighting this virus and we're all afraid, I've had so many conversations with so many hockey players. I've talked to everyone from Sidney Crosby to Wayne Gretzky. The pride I have in this game and its players is not unfounded. Over and over again, these hockey players prove how lucky we are to have such class acts in this sport. And for me, it's one of the things that makes it even better for us is that you can go to any city. I know my manager, Bruce Allen, was just talking to me about he was in Vegas and he was in a cab, and he asked the cab driver what he thought about the Knights. And the cab driver's answer, he said, was he never thought we would see a team come in here, and more than that, how unbelievable they'd be within the community. And to me, that's just a testament to these guys. They care. They really do. They're good guys, and for the most part, really humble. I just think it makes it even a bigger love, a bigger passion for me as a sport.
It's well documented that you played minor hockey in the Vancouver area and had NHL aspirations. Could you see yourself making the NHL if you stuck with it? And which player on the Vancouver Canucks or, throughout the NHL do you most identify with as a player?
I think I never would have had a chance to play in a ball hockey league. forget about the NHL. My aspirations were the same aspirations as 99% of Canadian kids, which is I would play in my garage and I dreamt of winning the Stanley Cup with the Vancouver Canucks. But that was about as close as I was ever going to get. I remember going out to practice with the Canucks one time and Roberto Luongo, by the way, who I've also been talking to, who made a beautiful video for COVID to tell everyone to stay home. I remember they said to me, Burroughs and Bieksa said, what would you like? I said, give me one breakaway. Give me one one-on-one with Roberto. So I came in and long story short, I hit the post to the crossbar. I got close. But when they asked Roberto after, they said, what was it like? He said, Buble started at center. He came in slow. He said, but then he fooled me by slowing down even more. And I think I shot the puck and tripped over my feet and went sliding into the boards. So, God, I suck. But
you still play. You still skate.
I do. I went crazy and splurged, and my one big, I don't have any fancy cars, and I'm never going to have a plane or anything stupid like that, but my dad helped me to build a little ice rink in my basement.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's so funny because my boys every day.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. You know, it's funny, like when, I covered a lot of basketball as well in my career, and a lot of rappers want to be basketball players want to be rappers. And I get a sense between you and Justin Bieber, you guys kind of have this thing for hockey the way that I'm sure there's some hockey players that would love to be Michael Bublé. You get that sense a little bit? There's some.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's funny, man. It's true. I mean, you find a lot of these, it's funny. We all, the grass is always greener, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, as a matter of fact, I just saw yesterday my friend Ron Toigo, who he owns the Giants. He actually sent me a video of Brendan Gallagher doing something on TikTok. It was I think Brendan's the new star. I think we're ready to crown the guy. Maybe we should have him at the Junos or something.
Whoever hasn't seen that, he does a Brooklyn Nine-Nine takeoff. It's what do you think of it, Michael? I mean, it was pretty good.
It was amazing. Funny? It started and I went, what is he doing? What's he doing? And by the time it was over, I was howling. I thought it was amazing.
I wanted to ask quickly, do you get any, you're friends with a lot of athletes. Do you get any special requests like to perform at weddings or bar mitzvahs or birthday parties?
Not really. I have to think about that. No, I mean, I think, sometimes you get the call of, hey, it's my sister's friends are here. Can you give us a call? But the truth is I do the same thing, as a matter of fact, Brock Besser, we were hanging one day and I said, oh dude, I don't want to make you crazy. I said, but would you come to my kid's elementary school with me and just walk in and surprise him? And he was like, yeah, of course. And we walked up there to my kid's school, and the kids went absolutely nuts, of course. And so I think we all do it.
It's funny because we've had a few people on today, and we've asked sort of about celebrity sightings, knowing that you were going to be on the show. So it's funny for me to ask you this, but you're obviously a big international celebrity. Is there a celebrity you've seen at some point in your career and you've been in awe of, despite the fact you have incredible fame yourself?
You know, it's funny. I've definitely met people that I've been huge fans of. Sometimes I've been disappointed. Sometimes it's been better than I'd hoped. The one thing I can think of here, and I really haven't told this story, I don't think ever, is that when my family and I were going through the toughest time with my son, Noah, I remember getting a call on a Sunday, and we were devastated as a family, and it was Elton John, Sir Elton, and I didn't really know Elton. I'd met him maybe once at some kind of event. And he sat on the phone with me, and he just talked to me. He listened, you know. He said, I just want you to know, my husband and I, we think about you, we pray for you. We every night at dinner, you know, we say a little prayer for your boy, and he just listened to me. And you know, he called me every Sunday. Every Sunday he would call me, and it blew me away. It blew me away. Maybe he did or he didn't, but. I don't know if he understood how much it meant to us or how much we needed it. But there was a guy who, it's funny when they say when the poop hits the fan, you find out who people really are. And that was, for me, that was a big thing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's, you know what, it's funny. And we're all in this together. And right now with the pandemic going on, we know that more than ever. How are you and your family doing right now?
We're good. I mean, I like to preface this always by saying it. And very much like you, listen, we're lucky. We're so fortunate. We come from a place of privilege because of all those beautiful people that watch us and listen to us. I can afford to stay home. And I know a lot of Canadians, they don't feel the same way. And so I always ask before I say, you know, give the ask, I always want to say how fortunate we are. But we're good. I mean, my life in the last week and a half has become just wanting to save people. I've been through enough with my family, and I know, Brian, we've all been through things that have been incredibly painful, and I just think that it gives you perspective, and you want to save other people from that kind of hurt. This is why I'm trying to get across how serious it is. I'm not sure why doctors, I think it's probably because of what I've been through, but about a week and a half ago, doctors started to call me, healthcare specialists, and they started to give me the projections and the numbers, and they started to ask for my help and helping to spread the message. I was actually asked to put out a PDA, to put out a public address announcement, which I did because of the ask. And then I started to call every single person I knew, every famous Canadian, every hockey player. There's nothing. I mean, listen, I then started getting more dire calls where they'd said, can you call the Prime Minister? We need more help. And so I did. And I've been in touch with the Prime Minister's office every single day. Trying to make people understand how serious it is, and it is serious. And I know you guys are probably talking about it all day, and I don't want to be redundant. I just think that it's something that, you know, if it hasn't, you know, for some people, they're still going out. There's some people letting their kids go and hang and drink beers in the park or whatever, go meet up. I think our Prime Minister is, I know our Prime Minister is trying to appeal to the best nature of all Canadians and hoping that their sense of patriotism and caring about each other will stop them from going out or going to work and do things that aren't essential. But I think at some point, I'm sure his patience will run out, and I hope he doesn't have to take measures that are more drastic than just requesting us to stay home.
Yeah, everyone, follow the rules.
Yeah,
follow the rules.
Hey, and you know what? I said it. I just talked to Tom Power at the CBC, and I said to him that if I could guide many people to Michael Rappaport's videos, I would. because I love the, I know it's harsh and it's frank, but I think he's, I love the way that he's speaking to people.
Yeah. Well, you're a humble guy and you're also spreading an incredible message. So we all owe you some gratitude towards that. You know, Michael, it's great to know you're a big hockey fan, and I know 94 and 2011 didn't end exactly the way you would have liked, but down the road, some karma might come back in a good way for you with a Canucks championship. Who knows?
Well, listen, I'd love that. For now, you know what? I'd love to get everybody to get our healthcare system, our beautiful healthcare system that's been a... such a savior to so many of us. I'd like to save it now. And once we get through this and we can plank this, hopefully we can get back to talking about beautiful things like hockey and have that joy again. But, you know, a day at a time, we get through this, and then we can start worrying about our hockey teams again.
Well said, Michael, and I'm sure your music's helping a lot of people get through this time as well. So thank you for everything. Thanks for joining us. I love the fact Berkey has friends in high places like you, so it helps our show out as well. So be well, be safe, my friend.
Anytime, guys. Anytime. I'd love to hang with you again.
Thank you.
All right. There's Michael Bublé. Thank you so much, Michael. Berkey, what a great guy. Just down-to-earth guy, and it was great to have him on the show.
He hasn't changed. I met him before he was famous. He hasn't changed one bit. And it's
Have
hilarious.
You?
The last time that he played in Toronto, he was at Scotiabank Arena. Mm-hmm. And he's very interactive with the crowd. He gets right out among the crowd. And there's some kid there with a Canucks sweater on. This kid had to be 10 or 12 years old. And he picked him up on the stage and danced with him. And the Leaf fans were outraged, you know, a Canucks sweater. There was all these people wearing Leaf stuff, and he's got a Canucks sweater up there. And I was laughing. I was up on the back on the light stage with Bruce Allen, his agent. And I was laughing my ass off.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, you got to be true to yourself, right? That's great. So Michael Bublé doing everything he can, and he was actually summoned from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to send a shout-out to try and inform people how important it is. How we're interacting or not interacting right now, keeping our social distancing and everything else. He's doing a great service to try and keep people safe. And yeah, that was great. It was really nice to have him on the show. We have a bit more to get to here on Hockey Central. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few with Anthony Stewart and Brian Burke. That's next.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, welcome back. Hockey Central just wrapping up here. David Amber, Anthony Stewart, and Brian Burke. I loved having Michael Bublé on the show. What a great guy. And it's funny, he had mentioned maybe the highlight of that interview was a story he had about Elton John reaching out to him when his son was sick and trying to help Michael Bublé through a tough situation. And it happens to be Elton John's 73rd birthday today, courtesy of one of our listeners, Catherine, chiming in on Twitter and saying, hey, by the way, it's Sir Elton John's birthday. So that's nice to know. And from a hockey standpoint, guys, there's a couple of pretty big birthdays as well. Bill Borilko was born on this date in 1927. Famous Bill Borilko. We all know his story. And Berkey, you might be familiar with a Sean Antoski, who was born on this day in 1970. Didn't you bring him into the National Hockey League?
Well, Pat did. I mean, I was there, but we drafted him. Same draft. We had two first-round picks. We took Peter Nedved, and we took Sean Antoski. And I know Sean is back in Ontario. I think he's up in North Bay. Great guy. Played really well for us. Tough kid, good kid. And I hope he's doing well. Anton was his nickname. The player's called him Anton.
Yeah, he played a hard, you know, hard-nosed brand of hockey.
We played in Indianapolis one night, and I had lectured the team about discipline. We were getting suspended right and left. And Sean was up on the far blue line, kind of a decoy, just making the defense stay out. So as a guy skated to the bench, he cross-checked Anton in the back and stepped in the bench, figured, I'm safe. Sean stepped into their bench, grabbed him by the throat, dragged him back out on the ice, and beat the snot out of him. So, yeah, wow. I got lots of time for Anton.
Stewie, you ever play against Antoski?
No, I think he's probably a little bit older than I am. I'm not that old, David. Come on, 35.
Yeah,
come
right.
on. I should still be playing.
Oh, shoot. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I got my number. My maths was bad there. Antoski's Anton's what, almost 50 years old, right? Right, a bit before your time. It's funny. Did you ever grab a guy off the bench, Stewie? Because you had some confrontations that got pretty heated out there.
I was a skill guy. Everyone gets this that I was a pugilist. That was my brother. But no, I never really grabbed anybody off the bench. I'm trying to think if anyone tried to jump me. No, I didn't really have any bench altercations. I was sort of the rhino that sort of just roamed around the jungle freely. So the tigers didn't really, or lions didn't really mess with me. So.
Yeah, you kind of did your own thing. What about you, Berkey? With it was funny when we had Brad Trey Living on, and I was taking a look at his numbers and seeing he actually racked up quite a bit of penalty minutes. He was a big defenseman like yourself. Did you guys have a similar style, and is that why you said he'll be a good executive, not a good NHL player?
Did you just say he's a big defenseman like me? I was a forward, for God's sake. My scoring totals were so poor. Everyone assumes
they thought
you
were a backup goalie.
I was a right winger. Yeah. I can't believe you just did that to me on radio.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry, Berkey. I should know that.
I will tell you, when we had Tree in training camp, and he fought Gino Ogic. And Gino Ogic is one of the toughest guys that ever played in the National Hockey League. And the fight did not go well for Tree, but he was the only guy on the ice. So all 40 guys dressed for that scrimmage, there's only one guy dressed who was willing to fight Gino Ogic, and that was Brad Treliving. So I respected that.
I was going to say, what did you say to him after?
I said, nice work. Like, you never make fun of a guy who loses a fight if he takes a fight that he shouldn't really take. If he's fighting out of his weight class, or if he's fighting a guy who's a much better fighter than he is, and he still takes the fight, that is a really hard thing for a human being to do. And he did it, and I said to him, great job, kid.
Was he considered, like, he was listed at 6'4", 225. He's much slimmer than that now. He's probably closer to 205, I would think, having seen him. But, you know, was he considered, not a heavyweight like Gino Ogic, but that type of player?
Yeah, no, he had, like you say, he had 250 minutes 1 year, I think, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can't get 250. Those can't all be misconducts.
Delay of game penalties.
No, you can get a few misconducts in there to get your numbers up, but those got to be lots of nickels, lots of five-minute penalties. So, yeah, he was tough.
It was Columbus Chill in 1992-93. Had 234 minutes in 56 games. The following year was even crazier with the Louisville IceHawks in the ECHL again. 37 games, 185 PIMs.
Yeah, no, he was legit.
That is funny. Yes, and you were a right winger. What was your most prolific scoring season, Brian? We got about 30 seconds
in
here.
In college? Maybe eight, maybe nine. That was my job.
He was a PK specialist. Leave him alone.
I was a grunt. I killed every penalty, and I was on second power play. But my job on the power play was just stay in front of the net. Just be a screen.
That's a tough spot, right?
No that hands.
A tough spot to be. Well, it's all right. Things worked out all right for you. What a fun show it was today. Brad Trey Living, J.P. Barry, Michael Bublé. Thanks to them for joining us here on Hockey Central. Stewie and Berkey will be back with Mr. Jeff Merrick. That's coming your way tomorrow. Have a great day. You've been listening to Hockey Central.